Hey everybody, it's Adam, live and in person for you. Hey everybody, it's Adam, wonder who he'll interview.
Hey everyone, it's Adam and I am back in the closet where I conduct all of my video and podcast interviews. Today, I am so excited to once again be speaking with actor and singer Brentley Gore and be featuring him as part of my new podcast season entitled My Entertainment Idols. Last year, I got to interview Brentley, who played Matt Garrison on the hit NBC 90s television series California Dreams, along with Jenny Kwan when they came to New York City for the California Dreams reunion. Now, Brentley has just released his newest solo album, and I am so proud to say that I am a fan of it. And for those of you who don't know me, my name is Adam Rothenberg, and for the past 15 years, I have been going behind the scenes with celebrities from the world of film, television, theater, and music on both my entertainment platform, Call Me Adam, and its podcast, Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. With over 1,500 interviews under my belt, I make my guests feel comfortable and at ease, which allows them to talk about life behind the curtain. So without further ado, please welcome Brentley Gore. Hi, Brentley.
Hey, Adam. Thank you so much for having me back on, and props with the record.
You're welcome. I am so excited to talk to you because I have been loving your new album, At the Ready. I feel like this is the perfect time for it to be released because, to me, it has a very summer, outdoorsy kind of vibe to it. And it's like the perfect album that I would want to be driving down the coast of any coast, turning it up and listening to it. It has such a great vibe.
Nice. Thank you so much. It was a long time coming. I'm sure we can talk about that, but it's been, that record was a long process.
We are going to talk about it. But I want to start off with the first question about the title of the album, At the Ready. So yeah. What does that title mean to you? How did you come up with it?
So At the Ready, I labored and labored and labored over what I wanted to, you know, call it. At one point I was going to call it Timeless, because of it being timeless music and all of that. But I settled on At the Ready because I really feel like that at this point in my life, I'm up for anything. And I really felt like that's how I felt. Like, I'm at the ready. And all these songs are my late, you know, are my newest release, and I'm ready to go. Let's put my running shoes on and boots and get out there, and I'm ready to do it. I mean, it's as simple as that. So I really settled on that being an action, an album of action, not an album of sort of, you know, acoustic songs, which I love too. But this is a more of a driving song, just like you mentioned, and a driving record. And it kind of covers all the genres, you know. So.
It definitely does. And I love that explanation of being at the ready. You're ready to go. You have your running shoes on, your boots on. You're going for it. And you really are with this album.
Thank you.
What was the first song you wrote that either spawned the idea for this album or that you knew had to be on this album?
So the first song that I wrote on this record is actually toward the end, and it was more of a kind of a rocker called We Are King. And it's the oldest song that I never put out, okay? And the one thing about this record that is a truism through the whole thing is that they're all co-writes. None of these songs were exclusively written by me. And so there was a lot of red tape to get through, a lot of that, you know, business-wise and publishing-wise and all of that. And I said, you know what? I'm just going to put all of the co-writes on one record. And I had 11 songs that first song included. There were all these co-writes. And then someone reminded me that there was a song that we had recorded back just after California Dreams had ended. And it was called Back in Love, which is the second song. And I didn't write it at all. They just asked me to sing it. And I adored that song. And I remembered it. And I was like, where is that song? What happened with that song? So I went through all of these DATs. These are like digital audio tapes, cassette tapes, but then they made them into digital audio tapes. And I found it. And I contacted one of the writers. And I said, I would really love to put this out. That was what sealed the deal. I'm like, this record is ready to go.
Wow.
So that's kind of A to Z, you know. But at the end of the day, it's a pretty big journal of a lifespan of music for me in my life.
And does that, because you mentioned you co-wrote all the songs, and that one of the reasons that it took so long for the album to get released, is that the reason? Because I know you've released some singles and EPs throughout the years, but this is your first full album in 10 years. So is some of the reason that it took so long because of all the co-writing?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Here is a behind-the-curtain story I'd like to share with you. For the past 2 years, I have been part of an entrepreneurial community called My Sexy Business. Through one of their most amazing masterminds, Groundwork Brigade, I have been discovering how to have a business that I own and doesn't own me. From strategy and planning, to implementation, to social media and simple tech solutions, I get personal assistance while being in a group setting. Every week is a new adventure that I love being on. I am so passionate about Groundwork Brigade Mastermind that I want everyone to know about it. That's why I decided to become an affiliate for them. If you have dreamed of starting your own business and didn't want to do it alone, come talk to me to see if the My Sexy Business Groundwork Brigade Mastermind community would be your flavor. You can reach me at callmeadamnyc@gmail.com. Welcome back to Bearing It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying.
Well, I decided yes, partly. And I decided that I spent a lot of time, and we spoke a little bit off camera a little bit about it, but I've spent a lot of time in... I'm not ready. There again, for the, at the ready, you know, I'm not ready. And I think that fear of doing something significant and profound has gotten in my way over the years. I've turned a lot of things down. I've not released a lot of music because I'm like, oh, I need more. So I'll do like 3 or 4 songs and then I'll be like, okay, that's not working right now. So then I'll move on to a whole nother kind of idea. And I said, enough of this horse crap. Let's pick your favorite songs. Let's not care what you think the other people think about it. And let's put it out and let's get the permission. Let's do the work. And that's what ended up happening. And it was really profoundly cathartic for me to release them. But once it happened, once I put this out, I mean, the biggest weight was off of my shoulders. It's like I've been lugging all of this music over the years to be like, what am I going to do with it? What am I going to do? And just waiting for someone to give me permission or something. And I've just decided enough of that. Enough of that. Release it, let it go. They're children. I don't, you know, it's an old cliche, but songs are children and they are. Let's send them off. Let them live. If you love it, yes. If you don't, that's totally fine because that's your opinion is not my job.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, Dolly Parton says she didn't have real live humans, but all of her songs are her children. It
That's
is
right there, Dolly Parton.
Yes.
Here in Nashville.
Yes. And I love how you mentioned that you were carrying this weight around, that all of those songs felt like this huge weight on your shoulders. And when you released the album, you let it go. And I'm in an entrepreneurial community where we actually talk about carrying around all of these things that we need to do in our backpack and how heavy it is. And I just love that you gave a very similar analogy. And one thing I do to help me, which I'm surprised at how much it really works, is I keep all of my thoughts of things I want to do on different sticky notes, and I have them in different order of when I want to approach working on them. So that's one way I help not keep that bag so heavy.
Nice. And you know, in the beginning when I started down this entertainment path, I've always been an entertainer. I've always loved and thrived in front of people. I'm a performer by nature. I've always been that way. But allowing that to sort of transpose into adult life, when I was younger, I didn't know any different. I moved to New York after high school. I went to performing arts school at AMDA. I think I've shared that with you before. And then I just moved to LA, and a year later, I was on the show. It's almost like I didn't have time to second guess, you know? But then when you get older and you feel like you have more at stake, which you really don't, because all we have is the moment anyway, you start to second guess yourself. And I think that kind of criticism of wanting it to be perfected got in the way of sort of forward movement. I've learned a lot over the years to let that go. So, you know, I appreciate that sentiment. Maybe I'll start taking that, writing those things down, like you said.
Oh, I love it. And I will agree with you. I do feel like we are our harshest critics. And I do feel like too, when I was younger, I took more chances or more risks. And now as an adult, I feel like I'll still take a risk, but it has to be calculated. And I have to know that there's going to be some kind of safety net on the other side for me to do it.
Yeah, exactly. People are not perfect. And the beautiful thing about today's our day and age and our entertainment this day and age is that we don't want to see perfection. I don't want to hear a perfect. I mean, I do want to hear an amazing recording, but I want it to have humanness in it. I don't want it to be AI. I want it to feel human, because that way I relate to it. No one's perfect, period.
One of the other things I learned in my entrepreneurial community, which I briefly told you before we started the recording, was that in this community, we believe messy is beautiful. And sometimes it's okay to put something out that's not fully done. And then over time, you can level up and get it to where you want it to be after it's been out there for a little bit.
Yeah. And you can't do that if you're, you know, if everything's been sitting in a hard drive or all your ideas are just on paper, you know, you got to like jump in. And like I said, I did that as when I was younger, much easier. So anyway, I'm doing it again. So it's like I feel like I have a whole another new lease on life. It keeps you young. It keeps me active. I'm really excited about it again. It feels like, you know, have a whole new life.
That is amazing.
Thank you.
And you should feel proud of it. It's an incredible album. The songs are so catchy. The way that it just flows from one song to the next, it's like, oh my God. And I find myself playing it on repeat. Like, it'll finish and then I'll be like, oh wait, I have to stream it again, because it's such great. It's also great music to work to. Mm-hmm. And I find myself using it when I'm writing. It's very good music to think to and to write, and it just puts you in this great mood.
That's cool. I thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I love that. I love that. It's thick. It's a lot. Like I said, it's a lot of life in there. So it's not just one sentiment through the whole record. There's so many layers and time frames and all of that. So I love that.
Well, speaking of the layers of the songs, I do want to play with some of the song titles on the album to find out more about you. So my first question is going to be with the song which opens the album, Straight to Your Heart. What is the quickest way for someone to get straight to your heart?
It's just what we've been talking about. Get out of this and get into the heart. If you can't feel it, it's just a thought. And I think the quickest way for me to do that is to take a risk. To take a risk on you. On you. So honesty and less calculations. How do I feel about myself when I'm around this person, whether it's business, romance, whatever, friendship, you know, that will get me into my emotions. And that's what I think.
I love it. And what a great way to check in with yourself that you keep asking yourself that question. All right. The next song is going to be All I Ever Wanted. So what is something that you have wanted but haven't gotten yet?
Before we get to that answer, let's take a quick break and get a word in from one of our sponsors. We'll be back in a minute. Oh, wait. You don't know? You haven't heard? You must not be subscribed to the Call Me Adam Digest. When you sign up for the Call Me Adam Digest, you are the first to know. You get a front row seat to my interviews and podcast episodes, where you get to discover new things about your favorite celebrities. You get personal stories from the other side of the microphone that you wouldn't know by just reading, watching, or listening to my interviews. We get to have a weekly connection, and you can add some fun to your weekend. So come take a peek behind the curtain with the Call Me Adam Digest. Sign up today at callmeadam.com. Can't wait to see you there. Welcome back to Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So as you were saying.
Well, there's a lot of things I've wanted that I haven't gotten. I think my platter of what I want has always been pretty large, you know. But let's put it into present time. I would say the thing I want that I haven't gotten is a complete self-sustaining income from playing and making music.
I think this album is going to help with that.
Thank you so much. You know, it's just everything we're talking about. It's just all I, you know, that song, All I Ever Wanted, which is the last song on the record, was really about what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say it. I don't go into a therapy session, but I'm not afraid to go Barbara Walters or Oprah with it either. You know what I mean? All I Ever Wanted is generally about needing the approval of my mom and others, you know, and I think being free of that to live my own life without the approval of others, it kind of makes me emotional talking about it. But it's really that, you know, all I ever wanted was free from everything you wanted me to be. You know, and that's what it is. I want to be true to myself. I want to be real, and I want to be free of thinking that I need to act a certain way in order to please my parents or please my, at this point, it's more about please. That's where it started. This point, it's about pleasing everyone else. It's just, I got to be real. I'm a people pleaser. Kind of by nature,
nice guy,
and I'm breaking out of that so that I can be honest.
It's always us nice guys that are definitely the people pleasers, and
yeah,
it definitely takes a lot to work past that aspect of it and just say to yourself, you know, it's your life. This is what you're going to do, and It's a daily challenge.
Yeah. You know, I always wanted to be, I always thought I had to be the opposite. I always thought I had to be like Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
No, I always thought I had to be the cool guy. Even in California Dreams, I didn't get cast as, you know, they wanted me to be the Richie Cunningham. And I was so mad about it because I needed to break out of that to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And so I think, but now that I've had this whole life, you know, all I ever wanted is right here and right now. All I ever wanted is just being present with you and with the people watching and just being real and authentic.
All right. And the last question that we're going to play with the song title of is Bravest Face. So when has there been a time where you had to put the bravest face on, but secretly inside you were struggling?
Good question. I feel like I have to do that constantly, but let's talk about a time when I showed up for my first recording when I started to record. I knew it was what I wanted to do, but I had a lot of voices inside saying, you can't do this. You're not, who are you fooling? Who says that you can be successful? And there was a time where when I first started recording, where I played with Josh Fries, who is now the Foo Fighters drummer.
Oh my God.
Dan Rothschild. And he played with everybody. He's Paul Rothschild's son. And these are LA guys. And we went to this old Rolling Stones recording. And I at a studio, and I started to doubt myself right then and there. And I said, do you know who Daniel Lanois is?
I don't.
Okay, so Daniel Lanois was one of the producers of U2.
Oh, okay.
I met him once, and I had a conversation with him, and he listened to some of my music, and he said, the only thing you got to remember is to hold your head up, remember to breathe, and tell the truth. And now we're up bravest face from that conversation. That was one of the things that inspired that. So when I was going into the studio, I remembered that because I was starting to doubt myself, but I just did it. And the more that you do it, the more confident you feel with being vulnerable and comfortable to be who you are. I keep going back to this theme, but it's so real with me.
Yeah. All right. Well, a few last questions in regards to the album, and then I do just want to quickly talk about a few things with California Dreams.
Okay.
Where is your favorite place to write music?
Quiet space. This room that I have in the bottom of my place right now, I just darkened all the walls and I have a window here in front of me. It's got to be an extremely comfortable, cozy place. I don't write really well, on the beach, for example, or, in a condo somewhere overlooking. I kind of need it to be kind of cave-like.
Oh, my God. Do you know Barry from Barry's Bootcamp?
Yes.
Okay. So I interviewed him few years ago because he also produces horror movies. And he said the same thing. He needs to write in a very dark space, cave-like.
Yeah.
He usually goes up to some cabin in the woods and there's no lights or anything and writes.
Yeah, because you can get to your deep dark places, which is where you really want to emote from. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
That's my most favorite because I really love like digging in. You know, the more I do it, the more I love it.
Oh my gosh, I love that. And what time of day do you feel is your best time to write?
I've done both, but generally nighttime. Mm. John Lennon said, when you wake up, you're not quite awake. It's a great time to write. And I've tried that a couple of times, more than a couple, a lot. And that works too, because you're in a twilight kind of dream state. I think when I'm getting tired at night, that also lowers my defenses
mm.
and allows me to be a little more pure. So I would say early morning or generally late at night is when my most favorite. But great songs, and this could be a whole podcast. I could talk about that forever. Great songs happen like that. You know, Sting's talked about how he's labored over these songs for months and months. I've done that a couple times, but generally when a song comes to you and through you, it kind of just happens.
I love it.
Collaborating, which is this record, is a totally different experience.
So now I just want to quickly switch gears to talk about California Dreams for a little bit that we didn't get to talk about last year.
Okay.
So you played Matt Garrison on the show, and he was one of my favorite characters because I related most to him. And I'm wondering, what did you relate most to about him?
I think I related most to just the purity of intent, him being just a super nice guy and actually genuinely caring about people. I'd like to think I'm like that too. I do get selfish sometimes out of a need for that. But I think generally his care, his ability to care for others,
I think that comes through very genuinely and easily for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's real.
Yes, it is.
I love people. I love people, you know, so.
And what was your favorite song of his that you got to sing?
I mean, dare I say the theme song? But for him, well, it got me into my gut. The first time I sang something, I sang Low Road.
Oh.
Which was a rocker.
Uh-huh.
I'd never done anything like that. It had been like straight pop, show tunes, you know, Broadway stuff. I never did that until California Dreams. And I was like, wow, this feels good. Like I didn't, you know, I was experimenting with my voice, welcome to the low, you know, and all that. But I realized that there was a whole nother side of music that had been untapped for me. I'm a Gemini. So, you know, I'm going to play the paradox, you know, so it's like the nice guy. And I told you a little bit about needing to, you know, kind of find the dark side of me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Playing with polarity with that is really good for me. And I really like that. So I'm going to have to say that was a game changer for me.
And what advice would you give Matt about the world of music now that you've been in it so long? What would you tell him?
I like that question. Let it go, man. Let it go. Stop with the trying so hard. Just be true. And when you're uncomfortable, just be uncomfortable. And for people that are starting out, I would say, don't be afraid to fail. Just realize that, you know, in many ways you will fail, but that's how you get better. And I would say, you know, don't quit and don't be afraid to take risks in your life.
I love that.
Say yes more.
That's good. And my last question about California Dreams is, if you were to play Matt Garrison today, if there was a reboot of California Dreams, what changes would you make in how you portray him with all of your life experience now?
I mean, I would like to think that it's pretty parallel to me. I really feel like that Matt's mine now. It's going to be Matt Garrison. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So I would say the changes... I would make a lot of changes. I would just keep it the same, just be a little more transparent.
Oh, I love that.
I would give a little more transparency and a lot less. I don't think I'll ever stop that in my own life. But I would say with Matt, I would, you know, we could see his vulnerable side more and see his hurt and his pain a little more. I was so busy trying to take care of Jake and everybody else, Sly, that I didn't, I was just that guy, you know?
Yes.
But I would show the vulnerabilities and I'd be a little more transparent.
I love it. We do have to wrap things up. So I am going to end my podcast in a way that I always used to end it. And that is playing off the title of my podcast, Burying It All with Call Me Adam. So if you could bear it all and reveal something about yourself that you haven't talked about in a previous interview, what would you share with me today?
What a great question.
Oh, thank you.
And I love it. I would have to say... Okay. So when I left Nashville, I went to New York City and I went to performing arts school. And I was, the reason that I did that is because I was really good at musical theater. And I loved wearing my dance tights and taking my dance classes.
Uh-huh.
Ballet, jazz. And I loved it. B, I wasn't that good at it because I hadn't had any training. I had the body for it, but I didn't have the training. And C, I always wanted to be a better dancer than I am. I wish I was a better dancer.
Oh my gosh, I love it.
Justin Timberlake. I don't dance real well, but I wish I could.
Oh my God, I love it. Well, I can't thank you enough, Brentley, for coming on today and being on the show. And everybody listening, please go stream At The Ready. And I hope we get to talk again soon.
Yeah, thank you so much for everything. I really enjoy my time here and I wish you all the best.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
You guys.
He'll get the dirt and the scoop and the story, for he happens to be in the know. Just ask anybody who's Adam. Adam lives for the business of show. Call me Adam.com.